Welcome to the Rice Club. Today is January 9th. There was an incident I observed on Facebook Messenger a couple months ago that made me think about what it means to be on the left. So a little background on what happened in this Facebook chat. Someone was criticizing a country over its treatment of a particular group of people. One individual asked for articles documenting this abuse, and the entire conversation went downhill. One individual responded to the person asking for sources with, and I'm going to paraphrase, quote, "You can look up your own proof. It's not our job to educate you for free or for us to put in free mental labor. If you want to know more, look it up yourself. I don't like to provide free labor," end quote. There are two ideas in the previous quote that I find disgusting and terribly misguided. The first is how it's not the responsibility of the person receiving the question to provide the answer, and the second is the idea of free mental slash emotional labor. Let's start with the first one. "It's not my job to educate you" is a phrase often found on platforms like Twitter, Facebook, or in activist spaces. It's commonly said during heated exchanges about politics or some controversial topic. Oftentimes, someone will ask a question and you might hear someone respond with, "It's not my job," or "It's not my responsibility to educate you." Now, this statement suggests that those who pose a question are also responsible for finding the answer. If you're a progressive, an activist, or anyone who wants to convince someone of a point you're making, you have to engage. You have to actually discuss the issue with the individual. For example, say you're someone who wants to convince another that Medicare for All is the best healthcare policy for all Americans. You have to be ready to step up to the plate and explain and defend your stance. That's the whole point of a discussion. You're explaining what you believe and why you believe it. Telling someone they need to educate themselves is highly condescending and isn't helpful for changing minds. It's implied that one side is already correct and the party needs to catch up or get on board. Not only is that rude, but it's also antagonistic and hostile. What if the person is genuinely curious about the particular subject or is ignorant or privileged? Issues can still arise even if someone takes responsibility to educate themselves. From a practical perspective, telling someone to find the information as opposed to teaching or guiding them can lead to a wild goose chase. Although simple questions can be answered with a quick Google search, complex issues like politics, culture, history, and other subjects require rigorous analytical and investigative skills. Where should they look? What sources should they use? Which sources are trustworthy? These questions are often overlooked when directing someone to do their own homework. Moreover, shouldn't we be concerned that someone doing their own research has a possibility of getting it wrong? Now, for example, let's say I'm trying to convince someone that raising the minimum wage is a good thing. If I have the other individual do their own research, what if they stumble across a Fox News or Washington Post article approaching the issue from a right-wing perspective? What if they get YouTube suggestions for Steven Crowder, Ben Shapiro, Tim Pool, or Candace Owens? The right wing have no issue utilizing out-of-context data and misinformation to sway their audience, and they would jump at every opportunity to get more converts. If we don't actively engage with people, especially those who are apolitical or new to politics, the more likely they are to succumb to right-wing framing. It's remarkable that no one has ever considered these problems, and why should they? Telling someone it's their responsibility to pick up the information has always been an argumentative trick to shut down the conversation. You know, in some ways, this could be viewed as another form of victim blaming. "It's not my responsibility to educate you" sounds a lot like, "Why tax the rich? Just work harder." You're blaming the other individual for the lack of knowledge or their circumstance, and you're putting the responsibility on them for correcting it. This is the same logic that justifies ruling class power or colonial domination. Why should we help those poor souls when they can't help themselves? Why should we grant this nation independence? They haven't demonstrated to us their ability to rule or why they deserve freedom. Some of this is obviously contextual. Some people are trolling and some are engaging in bad faith. However, others might actually be unaware or simply want to learn more. From my experience, people trend towards the latter. And I don't want to sound like I'm babying people or excusing bad actors, but it doesn't exactly hurt to respond to someone's question. You're still getting intellectual work done by sharpening your research and communication skills. And if people are engaging in bad faith, then we can disagree or disengage accordingly without resorting to snobby and snide remarks. Then there's this concept of emotional labor. Although the person in my original example at the beginning of this episode said the word mental labor, I'm going to utilize the more commonly said emotional labor. Now, emotional labor describes situations where we might expend emotional and mental energy doing a job we don't necessarily enjoy. It could also describe situations where we're expected to act and behave in a certain way, contrary to how we truly feel. Now imagine a nurse dedicating their entire workday caring for sick and dying patients. That takes a toll on your mental and emotional health. Being a cashier or clerk would be another example. It would be tiring having to put on your best self all the time when interacting with dozens, if not hundreds, of customers a day. To top it off, your job performance is tied to these customer service and communication skills, so in some ways, there is coercion involved in emotional labor. The current use of emotional labor, or free mental labor, is a bastardization and perversion of its original meaning. Contemporary usage of the term emotional labor suggests that even basic social interactions between people should be commodified, an idea that is hardly progressive. This is a result of the triumph of neoliberal capitalism that commodifies and marketizes all aspects of society. Thus, social interaction is seen as transactional rather than social. By commodifying basic social interaction, it is now possible to frame even trivial conversations as one between a worker and boss, or in other words, the exploiter and the exploited. The great irony is those who utilize the term emotional labor are generally critical of capitalism, market society, or materialism. Now I'm reminded of this one incident that happened over 2 years ago in an online group. I was genuinely curious about a particular topic and innocently asked a question about a controversial one. I was hit with the triple whammy. It's not my responsibility to educate you. There's too much emotional labor involved in answering your question. You can easily look this up on Google. I always thought this was a little funny. If something was so easy that I could simply Google it, then wouldn't it be equally as easy for the other individual to give me that information? Now, telling someone it's the responsibility to educate themselves, or that it's too much of an emotional burden to explain something, offers a cheap and easy way to leave a conversation, either by claiming victimhood or placing the opposing party on the defensive. In my original example, someone asked for sources, but the other individual stopped the conversation by claiming that they don't provide free mental labor. It's similar to calling someone a racist or asking someone to check their privilege in the middle of a conversation. Continuing the conversation makes you look bad because it gives the impression that you're ignoring or disrespecting the other party. The funny thing is, most of these interactions happen on the internet or on social media, environments where you can freely disengage and leave a conversation without resorting to snarky statements like, "shouldn't have to provide mental labor," or "look it up yourself." Although the users of these terms often consider themselves liberal or left-leaning, this rhetoric can hardly be considered progressive. On its face, these phrases seem to advance the cause of justice. You're pushing someone to learn more about a certain issue, whether it be racism, climate change, or something else. You're communicating to the other party that you've reached your emotional breaking point. This rhetoric can sound powerful and liberating. Telling someone that it's their responsibility to find the answer, or that you don't provide free emotional labor, conveys independence, freedom, and assertiveness. Yet in the context of left politics, this rhetoric is worthless, selfish, and unproductive. This behavior isn't motivated by the strategic need to build coalitions and alliances. It's fueled by toxic narcissism and moral righteousness. Many people believe that being on the left means supporting certain issues, which is certainly true, but it is expressed through behaviors and antics that convey self-righteousness and condescension. They believe that politics means winning the war on the internet, getting Instagram and Twitter followers, and dishing out some quotable zingers on their opponents. Being on the left means challenging entrenched power and creating a world that benefits the majority of people. By definition, you're going to be in the opposition. There's no way to achieve this goal other than building alliances and coalitions of people. We should be thinking of ways to engage and woo people, not turning them away with snotty remarks. This is why Bernie Sanders was so successful as a no-name candidate in 2016. Not only was his political program popular, but he was able to gain supporters through the clever use of language. He brought out young people, minorities, and independents by connecting with people's pain, struggles, and sense of justice. This discourse has given the right-wing ammo to discredit anything that looks remotely left. Their pseudo-populist rhetoric, along with their attacks on cancel culture, have driven many to the right, people that the left ought to be winning over. Right-wing charlatans have successfully portrayed liberals and other Twitter nutjobs as elitist snobs who look down on average Americans. Although right-wingers will do anything to discredit the left, liberals and parts of the Twitter left have shot themselves in the foot with polarizing and anti-solidaristic rhetoric on educating yourself or looking it up yourself. This has stoked the culture war Republicans, Democrats, the identitarian left, and mass media love waging. As long as we're fixated on culture, language, and privilege, economic inequality and class conflict remain unexamined. Great advances in how we think and talk about justice have occurred in the last several decades. Discussions on racism, oppression, and other topics are occurring in schools and institutions everywhere. While the language around social justice continues to evolve and grow, so do the levels of inequality and precarity faced by working people everywhere. The only way to reverse these attacks on the working class is to build and nurture a mass movement. This requires us to be open and ready to communicate with people of all backgrounds and creeds. To put it another way, those that believe it's the other's responsibility to pick up the right ideas, or that it's too emotionally laborious to engage, are helping the other side win. It would be wise not to entertain this kind of foolish rhetoric.